In the latter days of the Cold War, a group of my friends, all of whom professionally followed international affairs, formed an informal debating society we called Carthage or Rome. At that time, the world was dominated by two rival superpowers, the United States and the Soviet Union. It was a sort of international rivalry that had existed only once before, 2,200 years before, to be precise. Back then, the two rival superpowers were the Roman Empire and the vast Carthaginian trading empire. And the struggle between the two lasted for some 200 blood-stained years before Rome finally defeated Carthage in what historians call the Third Punic War. The purpose of our debates was to determine which of the two modern superpowers more closely resembled Carthage and which was more like Rome. There was a serious point to the exercise, to try to figure out which of the two, based on historical precedent, would be the victor in the Cold War. Carthage had become immensely wealthy by virtue of its domination of the seas and trading skills. Rome could neither beat Carthage in trade, nor, initially, at sea. So it sought to dominate international markets by conquest. The general consensus of our group was that the US more closely resembled Carthage and that the Soviets looked more like Rome. Thus, we all breathed a heartfelt sigh of relief when the Iron Curtain came crashing down in 1989. A decade or so later, my complacency occasioned by the outcome of the Cold War was shaken when my daughter Elizabeth made me a birthday gift of the HBO TV series Rome. It's a historical drama that details the fate of the Roman Empire only a century or so after vanquishing its superpower rival, namely the Republic's collapse, the dictatorship of Julius Caesar, and the imposition of the imperial system. Elizabeth hadn't seen the series itself, and it caused a considerable surprise and no little embarrassment to discover it contained graphic violence and, as in many British-made TV productions these days, explicit sex. But that, I told her, is exactly what Rome was like. The old Roman Republic was simply stumbling along a path to blood-soaked oblivion. In the latter days of the Republic, Rome was indeed an exceedingly violent and sinful city. Time-hallowed Roman morality had broken down. Husbands betrayed wives, and wives betrayed husbands. Parents betrayed children, and children parents. And not only sexually, but politically as well. The city's politicians no longer tolerated principled opposition, but rather recruited street gangs to slaughter their rivals. Caesar didn't actually overthrow Republican government. He simply took advantage of the chaos to assume power. Two brutal civil wars later, his nephew and heir, Octavian, later deified as Augustus, laid the foundations of the imperial system, and the name Caesar became synonymous with the word emperor. The series' great virtue, admittedly an odd way to describe the graphic portrayal of sex and violence, is that it presents to an historically illiterate generation a lesson on the fate of societies that shuck off the morality that underpins them. The remarkable thing about the Romans is how much like us they were. Their governmental and legal systems were much like ours. They had a Senate, an assembly, courts of law, and latterly rigged elections. They maintained a highly trained, well-equipped professional army. They had fire departments, health clinics, banks and insurance companies. They relaxed in bars, restaurants, health spas and nightclubs. They lived in apartment blocks, townhouses and luxurious suburban villas, all piped with running water. They vacationed by the sea, they went to the theatre, they adored chariot racing, their answer to NASCAR, and they loved sports of all kinds, the more strenuous and violent the better. There is, however, one big difference between the US and Rome, and that is that Rome had not been exposed to Christianity. Rome was a society in which pity, mercy, and love towards one's fellow men were not regarded as virtues. They were merely options, and not widely admired options at that. Like us, for example, they had an energy problem, Unlike us, they solved it not by drilling for more oil, but by the sweat of the human brow. Slavery reached into every area of Roman life. Even the poorest of homes had at least one. Slaves were Rome's household appliances, industrial machines, and, in brothels and the arena, their sources of entertainment. At the same time, paradoxically, a large proportion of the city's professionals, trusted political advisers, administrators, and physicians and the like, were slaves. Slaves had no rights. They could be beaten and even killed at will. But then, in Roman law, the pater familias, the male head of a household, exercised the power of life and death over his children into adulthood. The ancient Roman virtues were those of self-discipline. They were frugality, loyalty, civic pride, courage in battle, and stoicism in adversity. They're instilled into every citizen from childhood. But when the good times came, prosperity edged out frugality, loyalty, and civic pride as people opted selfishly for self-gratification and personal self-advancement. Over the past 2,000 years, the Christian virtues have proved to be immeasurably more powerful than those of ancient Rome. Over the past 2 millennia, they have transformed the West, enshrining love of humanity as the overarching virtue, and ushering in an age of freedom and democracy. The violence in the streets of our great cities today grimly echoes the political violence that brought down the Roman Republic. HBO's Rome series is a graphic warning that America abandons its Christian virtues at its perils.